Hello listeners, and welcome to another Devika Projects podcast episode. I'm Annabelle Williams, and I got to sit down with the beloved, humorous, and totally brilliant theatre and film actress Greta Fox. With a family lineage saturated in creative prestige, it is no surprise Greta fell into this career and is considered one of South Africa's most renowned actresses. In this episode, Greta tells us how she came to be an actress in South Africa, what it takes to prepare for certain roles, on camera and on stage. She shares acting methods and stories of her experience having to play a disastrous character. But ultimately, she gives us an invaluable insight into what it means and what it takes to be an actor. You can listen to our podcast on all podcasting platforms, subscribe, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and hit those like buttons. But mostly, enjoy this episode of Devika Projects podcast.
The acting impetus was born very, very early. I think it's because of my parents. I won't say I blame them, but they are responsible. I grew up in quite an artistic household. My father was an architect, and my uncles were poets, writers, and painters, and some of them were married to actresses, so there was a lot of theatre background in our home. My uncle, a poet, Ace Krieger, wrote plays and translated plays from Molière and Shakespeare. Yes. And I grew up listening to these things. And so it was quite a natural process for me to get into acting. But that came via dance. My first love was dance. My mother showed me dance films and performances at a very early age, particularly Russian ballerinas, who I fell completely in love with and became obsessed with ballerinas. And started dance classes at the age of three. And then as the dance progressed, it became clear that a dance career was a very tough one. And my physique wasn't entirely ideal. You have to have a very, very strong back. I had a slight weakness at the base of the spine. Mm-hmm. So I've continued to dance my entire life and progress into other dance forms. But this initial stimulus led, I think, to acting. I didn't study acting at school. We didn't have drama lessons at school. We had a teacher, though, who had studied at RADA, a wonderful woman called Miss Phillips, and she did quite serious plays with us. She did Jean Anouilh's The Lark, which is about the life of Joan of Arc. And the very first play I was cast in was, in fact, to play Joan of Arc, quite a meaty role. And by all accounts, it went very well. I just fell into acting like that and decided that this was what I wanted to do forever after.
Oh, amazing. I mean, there's such a physicality with acting as well. And I think people don't realize that. We're so exposed to films. They're so accessible to everyone. But the kind of practices, the artistic technical practices that go into the act of performing isn't quite understood. For those who don't know, what are the technicalities of being an artist as an actor?
Yes, I think it's very important to let people know that this isn't an easy thing. You know, that you look at somebody in a soap opera and you think they stepped onto the set and started acting. If you want to be serious about your craft and be a very technical actor, which is necessary, it's almost like studying for ballet or for opera. You have to train your body, and you have to train your voice in a very specific way, and it's a very rigorous training. So therefore, I was lucky to have studied ballet, and after my postgraduate studies, or actually part of my studies, was to go to study mime in France, because I wanted to do a more physical type of acting, because I think maybe because of the ballet background, I didn't see acting as just me standing there reciting in a very old-fashioned way. I wanted to use my entire body. And so I won a scholarship to study in French at the Jacques Lecoq École de Mime et Théâtre in Paris. And that was a very important part of my foundation, because there we studied to be clowns, and we studied with masks and acrobatics, and was a very physical foundation. And that is what I believe an actor needs if he wants to perform in classical theatre like Shakespeare. There are different forms of acting. I mean, the sort of acting you do on screen should be using your whole body as well, although they're not filming your whole body. But if you think of the actors we love, if we see actors in a long shot in a comedy, the people we remember for their physical style are people like Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and modern day comedians. And I think that is essential for all actors to have that completely all-round physical training.
Aren't there movements that you have to do every day with your face, if it's not your whole body, to be able to gesture and express the emotion that you're supposed to through your character?
No, in fact, that is exactly what you must not do. No, pulling faces is what you must not do as an actor. That is completely the opposite of what you should be doing.
Even in terms of exercising your face.
Yes, you will exercise your face, you will exercise your facial muscles, you will exercise your throat. The exercise is very important. You would exercise your face and your throat in the same way as you'd exercise your body, but none of that must be apparent. You never get trained to do certain expressions. That has to evolve naturally from the emotion. If somebody is putting an artificial expression on their face, you will see that immediately, and you say that is fake acting. That is false. I don't believe that. If it doesn't flow directly from the emotion in a performance, we don't believe it. And the training is there. The training is behind everything. But you would never exercise a facial expression or practice a facial expression. That has to flow naturally with the entire process.
Is that the same with theatre? Is it the same for theatre and film?
Absolutely. Theatre acting is no different in a way from screen acting in the sense that it has got to be felt, and the expression is the same. But when you are acting on film, you have to control your facial expressions to a certain extent. You have to feel the same emotion, but you don't have the freedom of range that you do on a theatre stage, where people are very far away from you. If the camera is right on top of you, there is a certain technique that you employ, in that you do not pull the same. You're not allowed to pull the same faces you otherwise would pull. There's a definite control that you have to exercise in your facial expressions and your gestures.
Yes.
If somebody's on film and they're waving their arms around and they're using huge gesticulations and pulling funny faces, it doesn't translate well to film. You've got to do the same things you would do on the stage, but you've got to make everything much, much smaller and controlled. Otherwise, it's going to look grotesque on screen. That's what we call over-the-top acting. That's what you don't do.
No.
The minute somebody is giving a theatrical performance on screen, we are so used to naturalistic performances that becomes unbearable. And we just say, oh, that's fake, I don't believe it, I don't want to watch that.
Can you tell us a bit about... We can't go too in-depth of the history of your career, but can you point out some highlights of performances, roles that have been definitive?
Yes. For some strange reason, I was cast in a lot of Russian plays, and I think that's also got to do with a little bit with the way you look. My features don't look so much like an English rose, it's more like a Russian peasant. And therefore, I was cast successfully in quite a lot of Chekhov and Russian plays as well, like plays of Alexei Arbuzov. And there were Czechoslovakian plays that I was in called August, August, August. So a lot of the plays were sort of Eastern European classics, and my career was very much built on that. Although I played Shakespearean roles, a lot of the roles were actually Russian people.
And is there a certain technique you had to undertake to perform in a Russian play as opposed to what would be a South African or English play?
There's a well-known Chekhovian technique, which goes right back to the techniques of Stanislavski, who was the person who was the master of realistic acting. In Chekhov, you have what you call a thought script, and what you think is incredibly important. You have to know exactly what your character is thinking. These were the first people who did that. It has since flowed into all acting technique. The subtext, as they call it. Mm-hmm. Everything you say, you have to have a subtext where you have to think about the context of what you're saying. You can't just say it. You have to know exactly what the underlying thoughts are. And it'll only come across as truthful if you feel what the underlying thought script is. And that comes very much from Chekhov.
Would you say that that's the prescription to good acting then? Immersing yourself fully. And am I wrong in saying that that's called method acting? I'm talking about film, and that gets thrown around a lot. So you could correct me if I'm wrong, but fully immersing yourself in the character that you're portraying, becoming them.
Yes, that is exactly where method acting comes from. People took the Stanislavski method, and the Americans developed their own form of method acting, mm-hmm. which is essentially the same thing okay. as being completely immersed in your character and expressing the truth from the study. You don't just read the lines, you know, everything that's going on behind the lines. So if you are playing a doctor, to take it to the extreme, you would go and study from a doctor. You'd go and yes. shadow him, you'd see what a doctor does, you'd see exactly how he uses his implements, and you would be able to be, if you've done the correct research, you could be convincing on screen as a doctor. Without that, you wouldn't be able to be convincing. It's a lot of hard work.
Yes, that is rather strenuous. It's a serious preparation.
Serious preparation. That's what people don't understand, is how much work goes into the preparation of a character. Yeah. You can't just say the lines. That's not enough.
No. Mm. So then in preparation for a role, do you take on this practice for each role? Do you feel you have to? I imagine there were easier roles that you could take on that might have been a bit more lighthearted, or that kind of preparation didn't need to go into it. Maybe this is a good chance to go into how you prepared for a role on stage and on film.
Now, there are lighter roles which don't require the same amount of research, maybe. But you would, if you were, for instance, doing a comedy like a Fedor farce, you would have to study the period. What were things like in the time of Fedor or Molière? Just as if you go to the other end of the stick, the really really far back, you'd have Greek tragedy. And that's technically a very difficult thing to do. That's almost the equivalent of doing opera. You have to have a lot of vocal training to do a piece of Greek theatre, because they're almost arias, as in Shakespeare. They're almost arias, and your voice has to be very strong to do that. You need to be able to project to the back of an amphitheatre, even if you're speaking in a low voice, as well as if you are declaiming or in deep anguish and screaming and shouting. It's technically very, very tough. And I think there are very few actors today who are trained well enough to be able to do that.
And those are actors specific for theatre.
Mm. But I think every actor should have that training, because even if you're acting on film, all that stuff you take to film, but you just do it in a slightly different way. If your voice is bad on film, we're not going to like it. A lot of actors who haven't got trained voices, we find their voices irritating. We don't know why we can't listen to this voice. What is it about this voice that irritates us?
Yes.
And it's, I think, because the voice hasn't been trained properly and grates on your ears.
Yes. So David let us know on his occasional visit to the bookstore during level 3 that you were practicing your voice with your cat.
Yes, an actor has to be actually doing
training
voice, warming up your voice
constantly.
Absolutely, because it's almost like a violin that you've got to play.
Yes.
Your voice has to be kept in training always. If you let that lapse, you're going to feel it. Even if you're doing a film role, if your voice becomes sloppy, your articulation is very important, and then people will not hear clearly what you're saying. You don't have to talk as if you are on stage, but if you don't exercise your vowels and your consonants, then the voice is going to be all sloppy and you're not going to really understand very much what I'm saying. I'm exaggerating.
Yes.
So you do all that technique like a pianist, and then you throw it away so that you don't appear to be reciting things in an irritatingly technical, superficial way, but people can hear what we're saying.
What exactly do you do then to practice? Do you have a script that you read? Do you sing?
You know, there are very set exercises that actors do. You know, they exercise the vowels and the consonants and they sing scales and they do all this. It's a little bit like what a singer would do. I don't profess to do that every day.
No.
I take a shortcut in that I in that I recite things and I sing things and I talk in different voices so that I can talk in my higher register and my lower register, because you have to, if you're an all-round actor, you need to have a higher register, a middle register, and also a lower register. And otherwise, your voice will be on one note the whole time. So that's the sort of thing instinctively that I practice without even knowing that I'm doing it.
Okay. If you're given a role for TV, I know you played Karen van Niekerk in Soul City.
Correct.
What was the prep that went into that? Because is that not a character that, were you given freedom to take that on and, you know, create your own persona? It was a very strict character sketch that they wanted you to play.
That was a very, very long time ago. And I'm trying to remember since then I've played so many roles that are more uppermost in my mind. But that was the first role I think I played on screen that was very much the opposite of myself. Before that, I'd been cast in roles that were easier for me because they were closer to me. They were either eccentric characters or innocent characters or slightly daffy characters or tragic characters. But this was a woman who was an administrator in a hospital. And that for me was, because it was very dull, I found the character extremely dull. It was hard for me to do.
Okay. Is there a character that you can think of that was both challenging and maybe equally enjoyable that you had to take a different path to prepare for?
Yes, I've got a good example of a character that I needed a lot of preparation for. It was in a movie that was also a miniseries called The Fourth Reich, which was made in the 90s, quite a long time ago. And this was a film out of the history of South Africa when you had these organizations that were almost terrorist organizations that were influenced by and that were followers of the Nazi Germany, and they were quite militant, and they exploded bombs and they did all kinds of things. And I played the mistress of one of these people, who, and she was a German character. And she'd come from Namibia, but she was the mistress of a man called Roby Lebrant, who was one of these terrorists. Well, we call them terrorists. People of right-wing Afrikaners would have called them freedom fighters. I don't know what they would call them. But in my mind, because they supported the Nazis, they're terrorists.
Yes.
And this was a very difficult role, because firstly, she was a character who was an absolutely despicable woman. And in my mind, the idea of playing a semi-Nazi was quite a challenge. I even met the woman, and I disliked her intensely.
Was it based on
a true character? I met her and really disliked her. And
that's not a good start.
And I don't think she had. I think she still had admiration for the Nazis, although I didn't ask her that directly, and she didn't answer me directly. But the accent was a big challenge, because it had to be a German accent that wasn't exactly German, that had like Namibian overtones. So I had all kinds of people record the part for me so that I could get exactly the right German accent. It wasn't a sort of superficial, cliche German accent. That was a big challenge, apart from the challenges of the character herself, who I disliked intensely.
Yes, wow. So do you have someone training you in voice?
A voice coach.
No, we a don't. Voice coach
in South Africa in those days, and also now, we don't have that. Costs a lot of money. Every actor that in the real world, in the world of Hollywood and British television,
yes,
have very, very experienced voice coaches who sit with them all the time and train them. And when they're on screen, they check their every sound. We don't have that. We've got to do it all by ourselves, which is very, very much more difficult. Yes. Yeah, everybody doing an accent in an international film will have a voice coach sitting next to them, checking and doing everything. They study for months beforehand until they've got every sound correct. And then the voice coach is sitting on set and saying stop every time they get it wrong. And sometimes, they just got to let it go, because you can't stop somebody after every sound.
So has the majority of your career been in South Africa?
Yes, my entire career has been in South Africa.
Okay.
Because I grew up in a time when South Africans could not work overseas. We were pariahs of the world. We were South African. Yeah. It's not welcome anywhere in the world, although I studied abroad. So the majority, I've worked for people from who've come here from Europe. I've worked with German theatre directors and international directors, but I haven't worked outside of South Africa. Very few South African actors have. What they have to do is give up their lives here and go and live abroad, yes. Which today is much easier because you can do it. You're accepted. You're not immediately kicked out because you're a South African. Perfectly possible, although it's difficult for any South African to go and live anywhere in the world today and work there.
Would you suggest that anyone pursuing a career in acting does that, goes overseas?
If you want a big career and one that pays you properly, I would suggest you try and study abroad, get a scholarship to study somewhere in the world, and that will give you the contacts that will lead maybe to a career. If theatre is your big thing, Germany and the United Kingdom are the places where you should go if you want a career in film, then anywhere in Europe is good, or the United States, New York or LA. If you want a proper career, an internationally recognised career, one which offers you all these opportunities, I mean, you might not get them, but you will be able to try to play a million and one things that you could never have the opportunity to do here.
I wanted to touch on a bit, I mean, it is entering another realm here, kind of going away from your practice, but your opinion on, or maybe it's not an opinion, but the defining difference between performance art and theatre, and maybe touching on what the centre is doing, the Centre for the Less Good Idea. Because I've just noticed during the pandemic, they've had to go online, and mm-hmm. they're actually, so many of their artists are performance artists, and they're posting 1 minute clips online. I don't know if you've seen them on Instagram.
Yes, I have seen most of them.
I mean, what is the difference to you between performance art and theatre? Or is it the same, or is it just one is a shorter version of the mm-hmm. other?
I think you have more freedom when you do performance art. I think you're forgiven for being in a space which is far more avant-garde. You can do exactly what you like, which would not always be possible in a theatre with a normal theatre audience. People have a different mindset, I think, when they're watching. And also because of the length, because it's the attention span is short. If you had to watch that for 3 hours in a theatre, you might not be so forgiving. So it's a completely different length. I think these short clips that we see on screen are possible because of their length. I find it very difficult to watch even a very, very good play on my phone. I try and watch it, but it's not easy to do that. I don't think a theatre play lends itself very much to a
screen,
a phone,
yeah.
a telephone or a tablet. Whereas because of COVID and because of what's happening, these short clips have actually ruled the day. They've become a form that is the form that is the most prevalent. And I think that's very good, because while people are waiting for a space where things return to some sort of figment of normality, we don't even call it normality, but bigger audiences can watch you instead of just a handful of people. This is a very good way to practice your art form, I think, an excellent way of doing it.
You were definitely part of the theater scene protest and experimental phase of theatre, am I right?
Yes.
Do you think that's where we are now? Do you think that's where we're going? Or what is the future of theatre and film in this country specifically?
It's very hard to see what the future is. I think theatre always has to be experimental and always has to be in a revolutionary, mind-changing frame. Otherwise, I think that's the purpose that it serves. And I think that will continue even in the future. We need it so desperately. I just wish people would do more protest theatre. I think people are a bit nervous of doing protest theatre today because we're not quite sure what to do.
Yes.
It's a difficult...
What do you protest? There's so many
things to protest against that people then return to acknowledge forms. And I think maybe a way of protesting is to disguise it within your art form and not to be so overt. I'm not quite sure where theatre should go. I really am not. I feel out of touch with what people are doing today because it's all disappeared in a way. You know, it's bewildering to try and follow everything on screen. A friend of mine has created Mark Graham has created an outdoor arena theatre in to the town of Rimwick West. Now that's pretty wonderful because you can do Greek theatre and he's having people do poetry readings and theatrical performances. And for another friend of mine has written a play during lockdown about two people who are trying to have a relationship during lockdown, and this will be presented in this amphitheatre where people feel safe out of doors. I think out of doors theatre is going to possibly be the direction in which we will be moving.
Right.
If you look at the clips of what's happening at Edinburgh Festival, bizarre things of people sitting in their cars, looking at drive-ins, people honking their horns and flashing lights, and as a reaction to what they were seeing. People from a long way ago. There will always be people doing things, despite the limitations. But where it's leading, it's very hard to see. I'm not really sure. About
I know
that.
You really have to be quite optimistic to see any good in what things are becoming.
Mm. It's hard to see how captivating and excellent it can be. I personally am struggling with looking at a lot of these things because they're coming at us very fast. There's almost an avalanche of stuff coming at us. So it's not easy to know how to receive it or how to respond to it, how to digest it. I think we must just wait it out and see where it leads.
And it also kind of dilutes the talent a bit. The really spectacular work gets lost in this flood of content.
Yes, I don't know how anything can stand out. I think maybe if it's really good, people will draw your attention to it, and you won't be able to miss it. That's very difficult. I think we're in a state of flux at the moment.
So, lastly, I think we should touch on collaboration.
Yes.
At Davidcourt Projects, we know all too well about collaboration. It is the basis of what we do here. Mm. My knowledge of theatre and film is all about collaboration as well. I mean, under no circumstances would a film be created with one person.
It is a completely collaborative art form, both theatre and film, in my experience. You are as good as the script that has been written for you, the director that is directing you, every single actor that's acting with you in the play, every scene that you're acting with each individual actor will determine the whole. The person who does the lighting, the designer, they all come together. If one part of that whole is missing, then the work will be unbalanced. A perfect performance, and very rarely do you see one, but you do occasionally see one, is when all those elements are in harmony and every person in the team has done a perfect job. And the casting is perfect, which is also difficult to do in South Africa. The same applies to film. It's film even more so because it's extremely technical medium. Your performance is often made on an editing table. The director and the editor can completely change what you thought you were doing on an editing table. They can take out the bad bits and put in and enhance the good bits. They can transform what you were doing. It's got to be good to start with, but they can do a lot of things with your performance in post-production.
Do you think to be designing the lighting for a production, you should know the script, you should know the music, you should understand what is being filmed or performed?
Absolutely.
To be able to do your job correctly?
Completely. Every person's working on this project has to know the script inside out, has to know the aim, the objective. You can't just come in and do the music or the lighting. You have to be part of the creative whole. It's completely collaborative. And each element is essential to the whole. That's very much the case in film and in theatre. It's the team, the entire team. Is the team the best possible team you could get? Are they all in harmony? Are they all moving in the same direction? That's what you're aiming for, is to get the best possible group of people together who believe in it. And they have to believe it, almost have to believe it fanatically. And that's where the director comes in. The director is very important. He's got to inspire this group of people to work extraordinary long hours, to sacrifice a hell of a lot to make this thing work. And if they don't believe that 100%, they're not going to be firing on all pistons. And then the work is not going to be as inspiring and brilliant as it could be. The director is absolutely crucial for that. He's like the captain of the ship. I mean, it's hard work, a movie. There's a crew that is sometimes working in the early hours of the morning in the freezing cold. They've got to be inspired by what they're doing. It's going to be a really miserable experience. They all have to be moving in the same direction.
Yeah.
It's completely grueling. I mean, you are confronted with a crew all in sort of skiing gear, and then you are sometimes in very thin clothes, and there's steam coming out of your mouth. You're blue with cold, but your feet, you can't feel your feet, but you've got to do the scene. It's really tough. People don't understand what actors are actually doing. They're not in a warm room. If you see the actor in the snow, they are in the snow. If there's a stuff cloud coming out of their mouths, it means they are freezing cold. If their noses are going red, just watch their noses. If they're going red, you know they're cold. You have 13-hour days usually, 12, 13-hour days, sometimes longer. You know, unions don't allow you to film that long, but sometimes people just do it anyway because they say, guys, you've got to do this.
And if you have a dedicated team.
Yeah, we'll have to pay you overtime. And they'll say, okay, we'll do it. You can't push your luck forever, but it's a grueling kind of work, grueling career all around. It's not just fun, but it is fun for people who are inspired by it. Then it can be fun. But if you're working on a project that you don't enjoy, then it's hell. And you know, not all projects are inspiring.
No, I suppose they can't be. Are you working on anything? Are you acting at the moment?
No, our industry is on hold at the moment because of COVID. I believe that, and I hope that things will pick up again, and people do seem to think that next year things will start moving again. I think there are a lot of things moving and shaking and preparations and scripts. A lot of people who write are writing things, hoping that they will go into production. Mm-hmm. But the actual production hasn't really happened. I think soap opera still continues in some form or another. I do not know how they do it. I think they've got to have their masks on, and they've got to be far away from each other. And then when they do these scenes, they take off their mask, but they can't be closer. But they're somehow managing to continue with soap operas, but not normal theatre or films.
Have you written anything yourself? Written any screenplays?
I have, and I've collaborated on the writing of screenplays. I'm not a talented writer. You know when you are. I can modify a script, work on dialogue. I can fix something up a little bit. But I'm not a writer. If I were a writer, I'd be writing all the time. COVID was a very, very good time to be a writer.
Yeah.
It was the one thing that was good for. If you were not a writer and you depend on the team, then it wasn't such a good time. It's a brilliant time for writers.
Or if you didn't write during COVID, then you were doing something wrong.
Yes. Yes. A lot of people did write, though. You know, one is amazed to see how many books were written and published during this time. It was the time of the writer, absolutely, essentially. Not the time for the actor, the time for the writer.